again, just my title again, it's Comparative Assessment of Soil Properties and Economic Return of Alternative Farming Systems. And my co-author on this talk is Trivin Pillay, and he is a graduate student still, though he's overseas right now with the armed forces, and he would be here today if he wasn't over there. And I wanted to mention that this research has been supported by Western SAIR, as well as folks at Washington State University, and then myself. I work with the USDA ARS in Pullman, Washington. And what you're looking at is what's called a drape. It's a drape of the Palouse Conservation Field Station. And it shows the topography that's somewhat typical of the Palouse. And it also, you can see overlaying in the red there are where the plots that I'm going to be talking about are located. So they're kind of scattered about the farm itself. And they cover different kinds of soils and topography. So those of you that haven't gone to the Palouse, it's kind of a different type of landscape. It's located in eastern Washington and northern Idaho. And you can see the hills that look kind of like sand dunes. They're loess deposits, excuse me. And they can be quite deep. They can range up to 300 feet deep. And the silt loam soils are pretty much key to the inherent fertility of the region. We rely pretty much on stored soil water. About 40 to 60% of the water comes in during the winter months of November, December, and January. And in Pullman itself, we get around 545 millimeters of precipitation per year. So we have a kind of a Mediterranean-like climate then with winter precip patterns. And then in the summertime, it's hot and it's dry. And we rely then on all that stored moisture to provide us yields. And wheat is king out here, winter wheat in particular. And yields can be upwards of 100 bushel on average across these fields, even though you can see quite a difference in the topography, of course. So there can be quite a bit of range in yields across these hills. But on average, we can come in at about 100 bushels or about 6,000 kilograms of grain per hectare. There's also quite a few issues with the Palouse that have been long-standing issues. And one you can see here that's illustrated is some of the soil erosion issues. And if you look at historically how much erosion has occurred in the area since the advent of agriculture back in the late 1800s, we've averaged somewhere around 14 tons per acre per year. That's over 25 metric tons per hectare. Per year. Those rates have come down a little bit, but not as much as you'd like them to from the standpoint of sustainability. We're still around, 22 metric tons per hectare per year. Again, that's the estimates, the current estimates in this part of the annual rainfall area, the Palouse. And it was estimated about 10% of the topsoil had been removed from 100% of this area, and another 25 to 75% of it had been removed from another 60% of the area. So erosion has taken a big toll. You can see the effects, not just currently, but also with the past effects in terms of depleting soil organic matter. Also, since we started using fertilizers back in the 60s, we've had a continued decline in soil pH, starting at around neutral, a little bit less than neutral, and now you'll often find around pHs of around 5, 5.5, and even lower in some cases. So acidification, continued acidification, is another issue that we're facing. Loss of biodiversity. We don't have a lot of other crops besides wheat that grow really well out here, and I would certainly, and others would welcome, other crops that could compete economically. So I'm going to be talking about the agroecosystems research trials. That's what I call them, or ART, and in some cases it seems more like ART than science. The four kinds of cropping systems that we imposed back in 2001 were continuous no-tillage, and in this case we had two different kinds of no-till annual rotations, one that was completely cereals, a winter wheat, spring barley, spring wheat rotation, and then another no-till rotation that included a grain legume. So it was winter wheat, a spring pea or lentil, and that was followed by spring wheat. We started to explore some direct seed organic systems. Notably in this area, a lot of tillage isn't going to be acceptable from a sustainability standpoint. So we're going to have organic systems. We're going to have to devise some organic systems that don't include a lot of inversion tillage. And so we started to explore what those kinds of systems might look like. Perennial polyculture, we were also interested in trying to move towards more perennial kinds of crops in the region, and Steve Jones and Tim Murray at the time, and they still are, were working on a perennial wheat, and we borrowed some seed from them and started to work with that a little bit. And then Palouse Prairie, about 80% of the biomass consisted of blue bunch wheatgrass and Idaho fescue before the prairie was taken out here, a bunch grass prairie. And we started to put some of those back in and kind of a conservation reserve program planting. These two guys helped out at the beginning in particular. Some of you might recognize them. On your right is Dr. John Reginald with WSU, and on your left is Dr. Jerry Glover. He's now with the Land Institute working with West Jackson. And they're sitting on one of our first experiences with organic direct seed peas. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So this is kind of what it looks like across the landscape. Going to from your left to right, our perennial wheat-based polyculture, we planted perennial wheat, but then we'd interseed it with spring wheat to kind of supplement the yield. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But then the Palouse Prairie restoration, this is the first year, so we're just getting that started. This is back in 2002. I'll mention that we started this research back in the fall of 2001, and it's continued on since then. And the organic buckwheat is underseeded with alfalfa and some clover there back in 2002, and then continuous no-tillage winter wheat in this case, you can see on the far right. This is kind of an overview then of the station of that drape looked like in terms of the experimental design. We have three replications of three crops, and most of the crops are in the systems are in three-year rotations. There's five different systems, and they're kind of scattered about then in nine different blocks as you go across the farm. Some of the organic cropping system constraints, and I mentioned some of them, high disturbance, tillage intensive cropping systems are not sustainable in many areas of the Northwest. Many farms lack livestock, and sources of manure and supplementing soil fertility just simply aren't available. And then no low disturbance organic strategies have been developed, so you can't look over the fence row and say, that's how a grower's doing it right now. I can kind of key off some of the things that he or she might be doing. There was none of that going. In fact, the acreage when we started in terms of organic production was extremely low. I'd guess at less than 1,000 acres overall. So we started to design basically a new kind of cropping system in terms of this organic farming system that was direct seed. And this is kind of the strategy, the overall strategy, legume hay followed by some sort of spring cereal, an intercrop where you establish again the hay, in this case perennial hay, legume hay, and then back around again. Some of the unknowns are, of course, of how long you might want to keep it in legume hay, what kinds of spring cereals you might have, or if you even want spring cereals, which are fairly demanding, and then intercropping systems, what might they look like. Also, I'll mention that Dr. Lynn Carpenter Boggs, as well as Dr. Kate Painter, who's an economist, worked on this as well as John. We used undercutting sweeps as kind of our main primary tillage, and so these simply pass underneath the ground about 3 or 4 inches, and they separate the tops from the bottoms, and they do a pretty effective job in terms of killing things that are out there, particularly annual weeds at the time. And we're using the strategy where we'll go in with these sweeps in the springtime, taking out perhaps a cover crop or any kinds of weeds that are there, and basically lifting the soil up and putting it back down again. You can see the residues are maintained. And then we'll use our direct seed drills, our no-till drills, to go directly through that residue and plant into water. And in fact, one of the things that this sweeping action starts to do is to dry out the surface. And if we can maintain some of the surface dryness through through either follow-up operations of rotary hose, et cetera, and if we plant a large seed of legume through that and into water that's below this, then we start to enforce some dormancy on some of the weed seeds that are stratified near the surface. And so this is kind of a strategy that we've been trying to develop in terms of introducing more grain legumes, large seeded grain legumes, into the system itself as kind of a rotation option that would be less demanding from the standpoint of nitrogen, et cetera. You can see some organic spring peas there. They worked out fairly well that first year. I could say that this past year we were trying to intensify some of this research, and it rained all spring long, and it was a complete disaster. There was weeds everywhere. They just kept coming and coming. There's that sweet operation. There's some winter crop, winter triticale pea cover crop, winter Austrian winter pea in this case. Again, we were using these as kind of fall plantings, again, to boost cover as well as perhaps some, fix some nitrogen. And then we take them out in the far right. You can see where we've taken it out with the sweep operation. That's one pass. Here's some organic established buckwheat as well as a little bit of alfalfa. We were seeding these together as a nurse crop, hoping to take the buckwheat off as a cash crop, and then we'd have the alfalfa established for the subsequent years. And here's some Austrian winter peas and organic alfalfa together. And we use the Austrian winter peas to kind of supplement some of our stands if we had some thin places in them. Here's some perennial wheat, spring wheat polyculture. You can see the perennial wheat is this long stuff right here, and you can see it's kind of thin in there, but we've supplemented that with spring wheat, which did actually fairly well as a polyculture, the idea being that you'd simply come back and plant into your base of perennial wheat. Unfortunately, you know, perennial wheat, there's no released lines as of yet, so we're working with experimental material, and we ended up actually planting it every year, which for perennial wheat isn't the best option. And here's some restored prairie types of things that were going on in terms of trying to develop even some seed sources for the original plants that were there. So I wanted to talk about some of the soil carbon levels and the soil samples. We took baseline samples back in 2002 and then repeated that in 2005 and or 7, I should say, and we'll keep doing that into the future. And that was part of Trivan Pele's work. And the annual changes and you wouldn't expect too many changes at first, but after 5 years, we did pick up in the top 5 centimeters where some of those changes occur more rapidly, that we were seeing across all the farming systems. In other words, there were no differences between the farming systems themselves, but there was a difference in terms of our initial levels and what we were seeing 5 years later. And on average, we were gaining in that top 5 centimeters about 338 kilograms of carbon per hectare, which kind of agree with the previous speaker a little bit in terms of quantities. But when we looked at the 5 to 10 and 10 to 20, we were actually losing carbon in those depths, at those depths. And if you looked at the overall change from 0 to 20 centimeters in this case, it averaged about 68 kilograms of carbon per hectare, which is still a pretty good rate of increase when you look at these kinds of dry land systems and the kinds of challenging landscapes that we have in terms of degraded soils, et cetera. Here's the particular organic carbon by particular organic nitrogen, and the thing that I wanted to show you was just these are the later sampling in 2007 versus the initial sampling, and you can see we've just increased both of those, but they're kind of following the same ratio from the standpoint of the same kinds of materials in terms of carbon and nitrogen. Particular organic carbon versus the cropping system, this is the type 5 centimeters, big increase again across all the different systems that are there. I'm going to get this working right in a minute. And here's pH, and this was kind of interesting too. We're about 5.1. This is the top 5 centimeters again, 2002 versus 2007. But you can see in our conventional systems with fertilizer, even with the perennial systems where we're adding a lot of fertilizer, those are about 5. And then you can see we have had some actual recovery of pH where we haven't been applying synthetic fertilizers in both the organic and the native systems. Let's see, I'm going the wrong way. Dehydrogenase activity, we kind of saying the same type of thing. We're seeing significant increases in both of these systems as compared to what I call a more conventional system after those 5 years. So something is happening here from the standpoint of, even though we didn't pick it up in the carbon levels, something's happening with respect to microbial activity. And this just summarizes what I just said, so I'll go through that. Oops, I'll try to anyway. And here's a summary of some of the initial economics. Remember, we're going to be in transition the first 3 years. And what's interesting, of course, is that we're making money over here in the conventional systems as expected. And these are gross amounts of return. And this is the total amount of costs in terms of our variable costs and land. And you can see some of the no-till with a legume in this case versus continuous cereals here. And this is our conservation reserve program planting. We're making some money on that. And then over here with our perennial wheat, well, that was pretty much a disaster. And we're considering some different things there. And this is our organic system, which we didn't expect to do very well because we're still trying to figure out what we're doing. And you know, one of the encouraging things here is that since we started this work, there's a number of area farmers that are starting to work with these kinds of systems as well. So that's kind of rewarding. And you know, part of our purpose out here is to have the train wrecks that go along with starting a new system like this. And so I think we've done that to a certain extent, and we're going to get better as we go along. But now we have some partners from the standpoint of area farmers that are also starting to work with these kinds of systems. So I'm looking forward to some of that. Oops. And profitability, just what you saw there. Some of the things that we're going to change with the organic system, we're going to extend the alfalfa hay phase. We're going to eliminate the amount of cover crops. We tend to have pretty good weed cover. We're going to eliminate the purchased organic fertilizer. This was just way overboard. We were buying BioGrow, and the quantities there and the expenditures were just too unrealistically high for these kinds of systems. Oops, there we are. And then we also eliminated the buckwheat so far during the alfalfa establishment, as it kind of threatens the establishment actually in these dryland systems of the alfalfa itself. We changed the perennial-based perennial wheat system to tall wheatgrass as a perennial biofuel in 2007, and then we also shifted one of the no-till rotations. So with that, we do have some next steps. We're starting to integrate some livestock into the programs, and with that, I'll just conclude. Thank you. Thank you. Get out of here.